Step 1. Get good. Hone your chops, get your fundamentals down solid, and take your show out on the road. This part of beginning your career as a professional copywriter is actually easy and straightforward. It does, however, require something most people live their entire lives without indulging in: discipline. Oh, it's such a dirty word. It was to me as I grew up. Discipline meant football coaches screaming at you, crawling out of bed at dawn to make the bus, following insane rules just because an adult told you to. The word smacked of authority, and my main goal in life was to challenge authority. I had a very bad attitude. In fact, challenging authority was my only goal. Goals were a hazy concept to me, too closely connected to another dirty word, ambition. I liked being young and dumb. It was simple, no one kept score on me, and there was no responsibility to worry about. I am not making this up. When I was 32 when it finally dawned on me that I was wasting my life. And suddenly, like a lightning bolt passing through my brain, discipline and goals and ambition became a good thing, and I had a lot of catching up to do. Listen, I'm going to assume that, like me, you're starting out pretty much from scratch here. Even if you've been in business all your life and you're as disciplined as a Marine drill sergeant, it won't kill you to see how the road has been traveled by others. And in fact, if all your years in business have befuddled your mind, which is more common than you might want to admit, it may be worth your time to back up and start over. I won't teach you how to write here. That's what my course, Kick-Ass Copywriting Secrets of a Marketing Rebel, is for. All right, I'll share a few more cool secrets that I neglected in Kick-Ass Secrets, but we're not going to waste a lot of time talking about the details of copywriting, just an overview. The more important stuff is in the Get Connected and Get Paid sections of this course. That's where the rubber hits the road for freelance copywriters. That's where this course takes off and leaves behind everything else you've read. So let's be clear on this. If you didn't already have Kick-Ass Copywriting Secrets, you should have received it when you got this course. You should read that first and read it again to get it. Those are the skills you need to get good. I'll spend a few more pages going over getting good tactics here because it was such a crucial part of the path I had to take. But basically, I'm just covering the background in this first section to set you up for the next two sections. Have we got that? Good. All right. Let's get going. Where was I before I was talking about that? Yes, discipline. When I began my career in advertising, I had zero relevant skills, none. I was a babe in the woods, ignorant of all things advertising or business. I had stumbled into the field through the back door. My high school journalism teacher discovered I could draw and made me the staff cartoonist, and that segued into a professional cartoon strip in my college paper, the California Aggie at UC Davis. In fact, I was the only guy on the paper who received compensation. These cartooning skills gave me barely enough graphic skills to become a part-time commercial artist at a computer supply catalog in Silicon Valley in the late 1970s. Even at $6 an hour, it was a better job than the one I'd left when I split Sacramento for the Bay Area. I met my first copywriter in the catalog art department and was instantly fascinated. I'd never considered the possibility that someone was behind all the words that appeared in all the catalogs and magazines out there. It had never occurred to me that you could get paid to write. Fortunately, that copywriter was an absolute bitch, a transplanted New Yorker who despised California and everyone in it. She flat out refused to give me a single clue on how a person could become a copywriter. "It's too hard," she said, dismissing me. "You'd never get it." Thank God she said that to me. I mean it. I was so pissed off, I stole her copy of Tested Advertising Methods and was able to read some of it before she stole it back. But that peak was enough. It was the break I needed to begin cracking the code on becoming a professional writer. However, it took me another 2 years to get to the next step. That's because I was stumbling around in the dark. You, however, can begin this next step today. Here is what I finally did. You can do the same thing, or amend it however you wish, or simply take advantage of what I discovered and use it as a shortcut. I've met other copywriters who have mocked this approach, but they are all inferior writers, every one of them. They got just good enough to get a few jobs here and there and to be able to call themselves copywriters. But because they leapfrog over because they leapfrogged over their education. They have huge gaping holes in their skill levels, so screw them. Pay attention. First, I got motivated. You're probably already sold on the idea of earning some major dollars through copywriting skills. Why else would you even be listening to this? But are you motivated to do what it takes to make it your reality? You need to get clear on why you want to do this. Motivation came slow for me. I was still staring into a dark cave when I set out to become a writer with no clue what to do next. My motivation bubbled up in the form of, as I explain in Kick-Ass Copywriting Secrets, literally having no alternative left. I tried to do the corporate thing, but it never worked out. And to be completely honest, I got fired. I used to get fired a lot, mostly because of that thing I had about authority. I highly recommend, by the way, that you get fired at some point in your life. All the great entrepreneurs I know learned very good lessons about business by getting a good taste of the dark underbelly of the normal employment world. In that Silicon Valley art department, I started out as a lowly paste-up artist, but kept getting bumped upstairs, and I didn't want to get promoted. I was harboring a horrible secret that, on each promotion, came closer to being revealed. I was colorblind. Well, not blind, actually, but color deficient. I don't pick up red and green very well. About 5% of the population shares this trait with me, including all the males in my family. I can see a red stop sign, but I don't pick up the red in the color purple, for example, so it looks blue to me. It's all confusing to non-colorblind people. In kindergarten, before I could read the crayons, I once colored little boy blue purple, the sun orange, the grass red, and all the trees brown and gray. You can see where this is heading. When I first got the paste-up job at the catalog, it was a black and white publication, and everything was dandy. But then they went to full color, promoting me to head of the production department at the same time. And every day I drove to work, I was sure I would be discovered as the alien creature in the art department. This all coincided with my discovery that you could be paid to write copy. And since I was still fascinated with advertising, it was part of that ink-stained wretch world that I'd fallen in love with as staff cartoonist so long before, that I decided to make a last-ditch effort to be successful at something in the field, which was a convenient decision since I had no other options. My career in graphics was finished. I didn't get fired for being colorblind, however. Instead, and this was a great lesson to learn early, I took the fall for the marketing vice president who had botched a major project up so bad that someone had to be sacrificed. He was astonished that I expressed relief when the hammer came down on my head. Goodbye, corporate world, and all your power trips and backstabbing. This was my motivation. Make it as a writer or disappear into the ether or something. I couldn't even contemplate an alternative. You know the story of how Cortez conquered Mexico, don't you? He landed his tiny army on the coast, then ordered all his ships torched. As the soldiers watched the galleons burn and sink, it dawned on them that failure was no longer an option. They were super motivated to conquer because there was no turning back. And that small army took control of half a continent. Gary Halbert relates a similar tale in his book, Maximum Money in Minimum Time. He decided, upon discovering the wonderful world of direct mail, that he would make his fortune in it. He met failure after failure getting started, however, to the degree that all the utilities in his house were shut off for lack of payment, while he sat in the dark waiting for orders that weren't coming. His wife was outraged, but his own determination never wavered. When he finally succeeded, it was a windfall. What's your motivation for going out on your own as a writer? Again, get clear on this. No one can install motivation on you. That's a job only you can do. You're the bottom line in your life. This is your call all the way. My next step was to learn how to set goals and meet deadlines. I tried the old what color is your parachute road, but that took me nowhere. It seems that damn book is in every path you take to a new career. I got nothing out of it. Even now, thinking about working in the 9-to-5 corporate culture makes me break out in a cold sweat. It depresses me just thinking about it. I didn't want to learn how to write resumes to get hired. I was after something else entirely, and it seemed like every book and course and expert out there was designed to help you get a fresh start in life was actually just grim training for a dismal life slaving away for someone else. No thank you. Now, there had been whispers all around me for a long time about another book that had some answers for guys like me who were trying to find that unique place in the world. A very old book from the 1930s, in fact. All my adult life, certain people had alluded to it, but quickly withdrew the subject if anyone raised an eyebrow. It's like they were afraid of being stigmatized if they admitted to knowing too much about it. Nevertheless, that book changed their lives, and when I was finally ready to hear about it and not sneer, that book made itself known to me. It was Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. Now, different people get different things from this incredible book. Hill's main theme was, in part, quote, anything you can conceive and believe, you can achieve, unquote. And that alone is a wake-up call to the slumbering masses. But what hit me hard was, finally, his take-no-prisoners approach to setting goals. I'd never had any real goals before. Because I came of age during the worst part of Vietnam and I was prime draft bait, I had a stunted view of how long I was going to be around. It didn't help that during the Cuban Missile Crisis when I was in grade school, they drilled us on duck and cover approaches to surviving a nuclear holocaust. Even 10-year-olds are smarter than that. We understood enough to be scared shitless, just like everyone else, and we knew that hiding under our desk wasn't going to protect us from any fallout. You young writers have no idea how much the world seemed ready to implode back then when the Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans, and a growing army of homegrown wackos were all chanting for America's head. Well, okay, after the September 11th terrorist attacks in 2001, it seems we're back in that swamp. So maybe you're getting a taste of it now. Imagine growing up with that kind of shit every day of your life, relentless. So for many people in my generation, making long-term goals just seemed silly. I never even bothered to try. My goal-setting muscles were flabby. It's something every kid should learn in school right alongside the three R's. Heck, they should learn it before learning anything else, because once you understand the mechanics of setting and attaining goals, the world is yours. One day, I want to create a little mini-seminar on dealing with reality, something I can take into the high schools. Kids get so much nonsense and idealism pumped into them in school, it can take 10 years to shake out the cobwebs when they finally try to exist in the real world. And the main theme of this seminar will be setting goals. Understanding what you want and then taking the steps necessary to get it. Here's my shortcut version to setting goals. The hard part is deciding what you want. You cannot say, I want to be rich and famous. You must be specific. This takes practice, and even when you get specific, you may decide halfway there you don't want that goal after all. Is $1 million rich enough for you? How about $1 million over 5 years? That sounds doable, doesn't it? Okay, say you decide you want $1 million over 5 years. Now break it down. That means if you do it through a job or business, you need to earn an average of $200,000 a year. That's a tad over $16,000 a month. So if that's the amount you want, and you want to do it through a job, you must find a job that pays $16,000 a month. And keep that job for 5 years. Next step, find out what sort of jobs pay that kind of money. You may need more education, or you may need to move to a bigger city, or you may need to start doing something illegal. And I'm just kidding. But you get the idea. If you decide having a vacation house at the beach is a worthy goal, break it down. What beach? What do houses sell for there? How much do you have to earn to afford that second mortgage? And so on. What most rookie goal setters discover, much to their chagrin, is that what they thought they wanted doesn't sound so hot after they break it down. What many veteran goal setters discover, also much to their chagrin, is that what they attain isn't what they wanted after all. That gorgeous spouse turns out to be a high-maintenance nightmare. The beach house is a money pit cloaked in fog 6 days out of seven. The big-buck job is sucking the life out of you. However, the basics still hold. You can get whatever you want if you know how to set a goal. You'll need this skill in your new career as an effective freelance writer because so many jobs you get will be absolutely foreign to you, and you'll need to break them down to meet your deadlines. Now, I'm a bit of a slow learner. I can grasp difficult subjects pretty quickly, but applying new ideas to my life seems to take forever. I'm embarrassed at how clueless I was for most of my life. It wasn't just hard for me to understand how goal setting worked. It was like pulling teeth. In a way, I'm glad it was tough. I managed to have serious fun along the way, and I wouldn't change a day. I was forced to get very good at setting goals, at figuring out what I really wanted. and then mapping out a strategy to get it. I made mistakes, got things I really didn't want after all, and accidentally discovered new things I wanted in the process. Now I'm a friggin' goal-setting fiend, and I'm good at it. And I'm telling you to get good at it too. Interesting point. You know what I wanted all along, most of all? It was time. Lots and lots of free time to play guitar, to write stupid fiction, to play golf with my buddies, to hang out with my girlfriend's dogs, to get up late, stay up late, devour detective novels and old movies, travel to anywhere in the world I wanted, whenever I wanted, with whoever I wanted. Money can buy you time. Pay someone else to do the drudgery that eats up your prime hours. Pay extra to skip the lines, grease the skids with greenbacks to eliminate delays and waiting and wasted days. The amount of money necessary for this freedom has changed over the course of my life, but I've always been on top of it, and that has kept me from getting too greedy or burning out like so many other writers do, taking on too much work and neglecting the good stuff in life. That's my goal. Enough time, enough money to buy me time to live a balanced life. What's your main goal in life? Start thinking about it right now. It will take you a while to discover what you really, really desire, but your goals will be the fuel behind your writing career. When you work without a net, as all freelancers must, you better have your eye on the prize at the end of the game. Figure out what you want and how much money it will take to get it. Once you do that, you'll get in the right groove and know what kind of jobs to pursue and what kind of clients to work for and how good you're going to have to get. In the meantime, let's get back to honing your copywriting chops. The next step I figured out I'd better take was to activate the discipline gene in my head. You have one too, though it may be dormant. Mine sure was. I woke it up with a simple vow: business before pleasure. You have to understand, this was a huge revelation for me and an enormous sacrifice. I had partied hardy my entire adult life to that point, and no matter how good you get at partying, there are no paying jobs as professional partier. My only saving grace was that as a kid, I'd learned to master rock and roll guitar only by giving up several hours every day to struggle at it. This was the mid-60s, and every other kid in school was determined to pick up an instrument and join a band. Most dropped the idea after the first lesson, however, because it was hard. I don't know why I stuck it out, but I did. I had a horrible beatnik teacher who tried his best to make me hate the instrument, and for 2 years I hovered at the edges of screw it, until I met a kid my age who was mysteriously advanced in music. He had had a better teacher and developed a great ear. And together, the two of us formed several successive bands, each time getting better and better gigs to play at, going from garage bands to tight rocking units in a hurry. That kept my interest level high. It is truly a life-changing experience to play Mr. Soul as loud as you can in front of 1,000 boogieing kids in a crowded gym. Learning guitar gave me a glimpse of what a little discipline could do. If you have kids, I highly recommend you put them through the paces with a good, not a bad, teacher. Any instrument will do. Keyboards, drums, violin, harmonica, whatever. Mastering an instrument is a huge accomplishment, and the reverberations of it stay with you forever. The simple discipline of putting business before pleasure changed my entire paradigm. It was a simple rule to follow. I had to accomplish every single task related to my chosen career before I could do anything else, every hour of every day. There's an amazing freedom in making a decision like that. There's no gray area. I even took it further. I put business before everything else. The laundry might pile up, the house would get dirty, and friends got pissed because I wouldn't return calls right away. But I had a lot of catching up to do, and I wanted to dedicate myself to the job. I wanted to get good in a hurry. To that end, even though I was broke with no prospects looming, I popped for a speed reading course. Took 3 or 4 nights, as I recall, to learn that system. I didn't master it, but I got good enough. Pointers from the teacher to do what I wanted to do. And what I wanted to do was read the entire library. Okay, not the whole library, but certainly all the marketing, advertising, writing, and sales books. The entire 600 section of the Dewey Decimal System, I believe it was. About 1,000 books, maybe more. Interestingly enough, I later learned that this was what other great writers had also done. Some actually flew to Washington, D.C., just to spend a week in the Library of Congress, poring over out-of-print books on advertising and copywriting they couldn't find anywhere else. Great minds think alike. Anyway, like I said, the speed reading thing didn't exactly take with me. My comprehension never stayed really high. But the course did give me several other ways to effectively plow through a stack of books in a fraction of the usual time. Here's how you do it. I cover this in Chapter 13 of Kick-Ass Copywriting Secrets under the subhead, Quickly Become an Expert, but it's worth going over again. Find a section of the library with a bunch of books you want to read. Pull a pile of them, as many as you can hold, and dump them on a table. Sit down. Pick up the first book and read the table of contents and the foreword. Then flip through the book, stopping at each new chapter to read snatches of text. Keep a notepad handy and write down names and words that seem important. Flip through until your eyes have landed on every page. We're talking maybe 10 minutes here. Then put that book aside and pick up the next one. You now have an all-important toehold in the subject. If you picked up a good book, you will see similar subject headings, similar chapters, similar words, and similar names in other books you look at in the same category. If you picked up a loser, you'll soon know it, and you'll grin from ear to ear when you do find the first good one, because you'll recognize it. Don't keep scoring yourself until you've gone through the entire pile of books. Just this kind of skimming will highlight who knows what, who the real experts are, and who the charlatans are. After you've identified the good books, and there will usually only be a handful of them, put the others back on the shelf and take the winners home to read more carefully. This simple tactic will put you way ahead of almost everyone else in advertising, because most copywriters will read one book on the subject and maybe get to a second book a few months later. And that one or two books will form the basis of all their professional knowledge. This is how bad copywriters are created. You, of course, do not have to go through this same process, since I have done it for you. I'll list my favorite books here in just a moment. I explain this technique, though, because you can use it in other circumstances in your career. When you're faced with a project that has a ton of material to plow through, don't just start at page one and start reading. Scan it all, winnow out the dud reading, and identify the good stuff. You'll quickly discover who the real experts are because they will be referenced a lot. The braggarts with no real chops will be ignored. The big ideas will be repeated, and you'll soon pick up the slang of the insiders. It's just a great tactic for getting hip on any new subject in a hurry. It will make you a killer copywriter too, because you'll be writing from depth. Now, I did this read the library thing, as I said, to catch up with everyone else in advertising. I just assumed the professionals already earning a living in the field were familiar with all of this material. To my astonishment, however, when I walked into agencies, big agencies too, I soon discovered that I had not caught up to what working writers knew. Nope, I was light years ahead of them. Most professionals never bother to go deep into their own fields. Too much work, especially in advertising, where you can bluff your way through an entire career without knowing a single frigging thing about salesmanship. So all of a sudden, I went from raw, ignorant rookie to knowledgeable hotshot, literally in under a week. Just because I bothered to research the subject I was going to attempt making a living in. My rampage through the library led me to several good books on advertising, like The Direct Mail Handbook by Bob Stone, as well as other books by the great John Caples, who wrote, of course, Tested Advertising Methods. References to those books led me to Wilshire Publishing, a private publishing house that put out Victor Schwab's How to Write a Good Advertisement, and put me on the trail to find Claude Hopkins' Scientific Advertising, which had been out of print for 30 years. I kept all of these books close at hand and referred to them every time I wrote. I also discovered Frank Bettker, a 1950s era salesman who wrote incredibly incisive book on salesmanship skills, and I found Strunk & White's Elements of Style, an astonishingly shortcut education on writing clearly and powerfully. Now, I also read all of David Ogilvy's books, such as Confessions of an Ad Man. Most of Rosser Reeves and Robert Collier, like the Robert Collier letter book. And at some point, I suggest you get familiar with these and other books on advertising, but I don't consider them critical. They are background material. What you need right now are working resources. Here are the books I had in my professional library close to my desk that I referred to every time I did a job when I started out. 1. Tested Advertising Methods by John Cables. Lots of how-to advice on writing actual ads, headlines, letters, and more. Cables is mostly a toothpaste and soap guy, though. Typical Madison Avenue subjects at that time. Nevertheless, it's easy to translate most of his methods to your own needs. My copy of this book is dog-eared and splattered with coffee and red ink where I left notes. 2. Scientific Advertising by Claude Hopkins. This book will be 100 years old soon, yet it remains unsurpassed in defining the never-changing insider knowledge of great marketing. Few, if any, actual advertising tips you can use are in this book, but the education in making campaigns work is priceless. Jay Abraham, when I first met him, insisted I read this book 8 times in a row. I only read it half that amount, but I have never regretted doing it. I still pull my copy out every year and read it again. So do other greats like Gary Halbert and Dan Kennedy. 3. How to Write a Good Advertisement by Victor Schwab. The best classic book on actually writing copy I ever came across. Gave me hundreds of headlines to rip off, plenty of ways to structure ads, good advice on guarantees, and more. An honest, in-the-trenches book, though it is a bit dated. 4. Maximum Money in Minimum Time by Gary Halbert. A solid collection of Gary's first dozen or so newsletters. Amazing advice on how to write killer copy, especially killer direct mail letters, and how to conduct modern marketing campaigns that bring in piles of money, plus all the other insider secrets of a guy who has created campaigns that have earned multi-millions. Finally, Kick-Ass Copywriting Secrets of a Marketing Rebel by yours truly. Modesty prohibits me from, well, screw it. I purposely wrote Kick-Ass course to fill the void in everyone's copywriting education. It's the course I would have killed to have when I was starting out, and nothing else comes close. I didn't try to copy Gary or Cables or Hopkins. I just brought it all home through my long, bloody years of experience as a veteran working copywriter who has to use his bag of tricks every day. Many professionals have told me that if they could choose only one book to use as a resource, they would choose this one over all the others out there. And who am I to argue with sensible advice like that? Alrighty then. I've just shortcut your education by 6 months and directed you to the gold out there, most of which is hard to find. There are a ton of other resources available, many of them A-plus stuff, like Dan Kennedy's No BS Marketing Letter and Jeff Paul's Killer Copy Course, among others. But you can overdo this getting good preparation. I've seen guys go into copy paralysis from injecting too much information from too many sources too fast. Look, writing copy has its secrets, but it's not like putting a man on the moon. You need to understand how salesmanship works and how to recreate that skill on the printed page. So yes, you need to bone up on the basics, but the next step is even more critical. And you don't need to read every book and every course in advertising to start. The next step is take your show out on the road. That means actually putting pen to paper, getting experience in the real world, getting your nose bloodied, paying your dues. Side note for raw rookies, if you've never written a word of real copy in your life, here's a cool get up to speed fast technique that actually works. Get your hands on some proven ads, pieces that have run or been mailed and have brought in huge profits, and copy them by hand. Word for word, recreating every single indent and exclamation mark and bold subhead. This is a psychological trick to play on your brain. Don't scoff and don't skip this step unless you're already a white-hot writer. Nearly everyone alive believes, really believes, deep in their heart, that they can merely observe something and then do it exactly the same way. They are dead wrong. Professionals in every category make it look easy because they are comfortable and they've already done it many times. Every impossible action you see an athlete perform has been done in practice 100 times already. Every killer speech you hear a great speaker give has been practiced to perfection alone in her room night after night. And every great piece of copywriting you read has been slaved over by the writer. You don't just pick up a pen and start doodling and by magic come up with a great ad. Nope. Every word, every sentence, every paragraph break and subhead has been sweated over and rewritten and examined critically to make sure it passes the ultimate test. Does it help the sales pitch work? Just passively reading an ad gives you zero insight to its mechanics. On the other hand, sitting down and copying every word by hand does open the code behind the sweat and tears and editing. Do this quick test. Look at a sentence in a magazine, one with more than 8 words in it. Read it. Now put the magazine aside and write that sentence out in longhand from memory. Most people cannot do it. They think they can. In fact, they would bet on it, but they cannot do it. Why? Because reading is a passive behavior. Study after study has shown that students who take notes while reading do multiple times better than students who merely read the assigned texts. It's no contest. You want to learn how to hit a golf ball like Tiger Woods? You can't just watch him and then go do it. You need to slowly, painfully, carefully copy every twitch and movement. You want to play guitar like Eric Clapton? Just listening won't cut it. You have to sit down and deconstruct every note and phrase. You want to write like a world-class copywriter? Sit down and copy his ads. What you will discover is this. There is a rhythm to the words, an invisible cadence. You will be copying a sentence and be surprised to discover you've substituted other words for the ones actually in the piece, or you've combined sentences that the writer had purposely separated. You've missed the rhythm. There's a voice in your head when you write. Right now, as a rookie, that voice sucks. Your writing has been corrupted by English teachers and all sorts of other bad influences. Great copywriters not only have a smooth, compelling voice to their work, but they have welded that voice to superior salesmanship skills, and they've worked to make that wedded combination effective many times over. There's a reason for every sentence being written the way it's written and put where it appears in the copy. They make it look easy because great copy flows like melted chocolate poured over cake. The words smoothly run through your eyes, into your brain, and down to your heart, and right into your wallet, without you noticing the process at all. If there's any magic to copywriting, there it is. Great copy is invisible. Get your name out there on as many direct mail lists as you can find. You want to be getting a fistful of junk mail every day. Pay attention to what's in that pile. When you see pieces being mailed month after month, you'll know they're working. Learn to recognize the good pieces from the bad by guessing which ones you're going to see next month. Get a hold of a year's worth of all the top magazines. You can find them at the library. See which long copy direct response ads are repeated throughout the year. Those are the winners. Forget about the non-direct response ads. They are run over and over again because the businesses behind them have no clue how to track response, and so they simply run ads in a vacuum, hoping they'll somehow improve business. Collect the great ads you find in a swipe file. These are the ads you want to copy, study, and pay attention to. I have created collections of my best letters and ads, and you have these. If you cannot put your hands on other proven pieces, at least you have mine. This hand copying tactic will help you get quickly through the first stage of copywriting status. You'll be burning good habits and great rhythm into your brain. It's the toughest stage to survive, this first one, and if a writer is going to fail and get discouraged, this is where it commonly happens. So go to the next section to begin this first stage. Stage 1, Raw Rookie. Beginner copywriters are dangerous to everyone, including themselves. Because I offer critiques to my Insider Club members, I see a lot of first attempt ads, and they uniformly suck. Even after I offer concrete examples for headlines, openings, and offers, beginners almost never take my advice verbatim. They insist on putting it in their own words and usually butcher my suggestion beyond comprehension. Hey, I butchered the first ads I did. Fortunately, I understood the need to rewrite over and over and put all copy through the two main tests of great copy. One, the so what test, where every phrase must be integral to your pitch. If your reader can say, "So what?" at any point, then that phrase needs to change or come out. Because you've just mumbled or become dangerously unclear or worse, gotten off track in your sales pitch. Your copy must grab onto the reader's hot buttons and never let go. It doesn't matter what you think or what you want. All that matters in your copy is that you stay focused on the inner needs and desires of your reader. Examine your copy with a super critical eye, and if at any point you can furrow your brow and ask, "So what?" then you must rewrite. And then give your copy to the off on a tangent test. All great sales copy is like a greased slide, where the reader gets on at the beginning and jets through the piece as if on a slide, right to the part where he takes out his wallet. If any phrase goes off the pitch, it stops the reader's journey. That's bad. Get to the point immediately and stay there. So, by constantly running my copy through this kind of grinder, even my first ads were at least low-end professional quality. Good enough to be mailed, good enough to pull orders. In this raw rookie stage, you should read and reread the better material on advertising, hand copy great ads verbatim, and, if you take any jobs at all, take small ones. You should be more interested in priming your pump right now. Force feed info and tactics and history and knowledge into your skull. It's important to shuck any attitude you have during this stage. You're a sponge, not a player yet. Soak up everything you can. Leave your ego at home. Your stuff is going to be rough. You're climbing the steep side of the learning curve. But if you stick it out and load up on all the right basics, you're ready to launch. How long should you stay in this raw rookie stage? I took a couple of long weeks, but it's all I did. I woke up early, rushed through breakfast, and spent the day at the library or tracking books down, reading constantly, taking reams of notes, really cramming the facts into my brain. And every move I made was made with an eye on the prize of becoming a professional copywriter. If you're doing this initial loading up in your spare time, it'll take longer, and that's okay. You'll know when you're done because you'll stop reading about things that seem new. You'll nod when you see a headline that works. You'll start to recognize good ads as well as ads that never stood a chance. But for God's sakes, don't set up camp in this stage. I've seen it happen. People just get frozen and spend all their precious time doing more research, finding another damn book to read, becoming archivists instead of writers. Don't do that. You want to be a writer? I've just shown you a primo, tested, and proven shortcut to get yourself ready. Now it's time to start laying down some copy. Stage 2. Shameless whore. This is where you really hone your chops, get your nose bloodied, pay your dues, and all the other metaphors that apply. This is where you start to write for other people. Basically, I recommend you take every single little job that comes within your reach. Don't worry about fees at this point. Take every job. Seek jobs out among the local businesses around you, among friends, colleagues, friends of friends. Write menus up for restaurants. Do quickie touch-base letters for local real estate agents. Make yellow page ads for small businesses. Write fundraising letters for the Elks. Create personal ads for your friends. Do as much as you can so you're writing every day, learning about choosing the right words, about dealing with clients, about meeting deadlines, and learning how to use the secrets of great copy for your own ends. A writer writes. This is the stage where all the wannabes get left behind. If you really have what it takes to become a writer, you'll know during this stage. Personally, I loved every minute of it, even though most of the jobs I took paid hardly anything at all. I took stuff in trade instead of cash. I accepted free meals. I did favors for friends. And I did the work for free when a business simply didn't have any cash to pay me. But I was writing ad copy, writing letters that got mailed, headlines that saw print, sales pitches that tried to reach customers. And here's what I learned almost immediately. You don't want to be a shameless whore for very long. Frankly, working for peanuts sucks big time, but the experience you gain just from writing for someone else will stay with you forever. The chasm between wanting to write and actually sitting down and stroking out words that you will present as finished copy to a client is as wide as the Grand Canyon. Simply busting your cherry on meeting a single deadline will change everything about your life. Next, dealing with people can really suck. There's a saying in business, quote, no good deed goes unpunished, unquote. So you learn very quickly that just because you're knocking yourself out on an ad you're doing for free or that costs the client a slim fraction of what he'd have to pay a working pro, you cannot expect gratitude or cooperation. This is an important lesson. Get as many surprises as you can about how people view and treat advertising out of the way as fast as you can. It will clear the cobwebs from your mind, crush any limiting idealism, and put you firmly in the real world, where lessons like these can quickly segue into large amounts of cash. Next, the better your copy is, the more people will insist on changing it. Let them. What you're doing is writing, meeting deadlines, getting experience at this stage. Don't get hung up on any one job. An otherwise savvy businessman will have his niece, the one majoring in French literature, rewrite your ad. Another guy's wife will refuse to let him mail a great attention-getting letter because of, quote, what people might think, unquote. Remember, everyone thinks they're a frigging expert on advertising. Their minds are completely polluted with the acres of bad advertising they see around them every second of every day. Don't try to evangelize anyone on this. Just get your grunt work in. How long do you stay in this second stage? Get into it and out of it again as quickly as possible, but don't shortcut your learning curve. I spent an entire year mucking around this stage, and I needed every minute of it. Priceless lessons. Heck, even after I became a pretty good professional copywriter, I willingly went back into the stage when I first met Jay Abraham. There was no way he was going to pay me what I wanted for any job. So I traded copy for free access to his office. That was a deal that many, but not all, businessmen will jump on. For a couple of years, I came and went as I pleased, writing whatever bits of copy he needed. And what I learned by watching Jay and observing how he ran his business was priceless, worth a million times more than the measly fees I would have earned by working a standard deal at that time. Sure, I was supposed to be a real writer by that time, with all the ego and attitude, but for the first time in my life, I was smarter than my ego. I kept my eye on the prize, becoming not just a good writer, but one of the best. And any time I came across something or someone that would get me closer to that goal, I took advantage of it. Screw ego, anyway. What's your highfalutin ego done for you lately except get you into trouble? Look, you don't have to quit your day job to accomplish this get your licks in stage. Stay up late, steal hours whenever you can, and write like a demon. Have Kick-Ass Copywriting Secrets and a few other of the suggested books at your elbow and steal, copy, swipe, and plagiarize as much as you can. Craft a headline over several hours until it's perfect, just like a real professional writer would. Rewrite it 200 times, trying out different words, different styles, different approaches, just like a real professional writer would. I mean it, 200 times. Get into it, just like a real professional writer would. Rework your opening sentence until it becomes a monster that grabs the reader and won't let go. Pay attention to every single word, every comma, every indent. Try 15 different action verbs in each sentence. He went downtown. He strolled downtown. He hurried downtown frantic. He raced downtown in a freaked out rage. That kind of stuff. Get into it, dude. Writers get lost in a trance when they're working. It's one of the most pleasurable states of mind I've ever experienced, and I've experienced a lot of states of mind, believe me. What I'm trying to get you to do is make that connection between your brain and your fingers. When that click finally happens, when your mind races easily around all that knowledge you've stuffed in there, pulling out phrases and ideas and references and metaphors like crazy, and you barely feel your fingers dancing on the keyboard, and the words just pour out. Well, that's magic. Writing, and writing well, is like discovering how to sword fight. The power suddenly available at your fingertips can literally shake up the world. But there's only one way to get there, by actually sitting down and writing. All right, you don't type? I suggest you learn because it gives you access to a computer or word processor, and that will speed up your writing. But hey, some of the best copywriters still cranking it out can't type a word. Gary Halbert still works longhand, pen on the legal pad, and then has it typed by a secretary. That works for him. Don't let this hold you up. Yes, it's all hard at first. You'll feel like your brain is bleeding because it doesn't naturally know how to or even want to connect all those stray dots in your mind to infuse your sentences with the right ingredients. But it gets easier each time you sit down. This I can promise you. Love your writing and force yourself to write by taking on every little job you can, and you will be rewarded. You know that metaphor I've used about most people standing at the edge of the pool afraid to jump in? Reading everything I've suggested, copying proven ads, getting hip with everything you can about writing copy is still standing on the edge of the pool. However, becoming a shameless whore means you've jumped in. You're only paddling around, making a big wet mess, but you're in the pool, by God. This will piss off the wannabes who can never bring themselves to jump in. This will separate you from the yammering crowd of losers around you. And with each stroke, you're getting closer to the promised land. Stage 3, lean and mean writing machine. Don't pretend you're at this stage until you actually arrive. The world is filled with copywriters who think it's all about copying an attitude. And yes, that kind of bluffing may get you some jobs, and you may even be able to talk clients into parting with huge fees up front. But unlike other jobs, direct response copywriting is dependent on results. If you cannot write your way out of a paper bag, but you land a big job anyway, you're in deep doo-doo when it comes time to produce, aren't you? However, once you've got a few dozen jobs under your belt and you know you can create decent copy because you've already done it several times, and you know you can meet a deadline because you have, and you know how to deal with the client because you've given what you've written to someone already and worked through the consequences, then and only then are you a real professional writer. Now you've got some choices to make. You can A, go freelance and use what you learn in the Get Connected section to find jobs and get your name out there, or B, get hooked up with an agency as a staff writer, or C, get hooked up with a company and become the writer, or D, start an entrepreneurial enterprise and use your sales writing skills to sell your own products or business or service. I did all four in various ways. Like I said, I was in a hurry to shortcut my education and get as good as possible as soon as possible. To me, that meant following every single path that presented itself when it presented itself, and take that path until I stumbled on another one. So I became a one-man art department for small business for a time. A very short time, because it was a dull product that I was working for, and the money available for ads was minuscule, and I got bored. So I went freelance and began being the hired gun at several agencies in town. This led to being the main freelancer at one agency, and I was there so often, the receptionist and the accountant just assumed I was on the permanent payroll. When they did try to hire me outright, I refused, and I'll tell you why in a moment. So I got entwined with several entrepreneurial projects after that, some of my own and some teaming up with other businessmen. I got a good, healthy taste of every option out there, and I chose freelancing. It was riskier, but that didn't bother me, no. What bothered me was wearing ties and coming to work at 8 a.m. every day, even though I was doing my best writing late at night. What bothered me was the soul-robbing monotony and bureaucratic nonsense of the, quote, normal, unquote, work world. The clincher for me, the last straw between me and the corporate master, came about when I was working late one night at one of the many real jobs I had. And the vice president of marketing wandered into the art department, wondering who was in there at midnight on a Tuesday. Scared the hell out of me. I thought I was alone in the building. I went back to my work, trying hard to meet the upcoming deadline. I have never minded working long hours when I knew I was getting stuff done. And the next morning, when I came in at 8:15 instead of 8 a.m. sharp, the vice president stormed into the art department and told me he didn't care how late I worked. He wanted me there on time every morning. He read me a riot act. What would become of the world, he said, if people just worked on their own pace, on their own hours, without anyone to keep track? That was a wake-up call. In the corporate world, showing up on time is worth more than getting the job done right. It's all about appearances and not rocking the boat. Goodbye to that shit. I admit it, I'm a closet vampire. Many writers are. I've never been a morning person. My juices start flowing hard in the late afternoon. It's just the way my biology works and always has. When I get on a writing jag, hours can fly by, and suddenly it's 2 in the morning and I'm still wired. It's quiet at night, few distractions like garbage trucks, the neighbor with the buzz saw, landscape crews with leaf blowers. It's a great time to write. It just makes for a pathetic social life, which is all beside the point. You'll find your own groove time by actually writing. Maybe you like to get up early and write for a few hours. Lots of writers do that, though the thought of it makes my brain shiver. Other writers seem to be able to turn on the creative juices at will. I just trust these people. Most just muddle through, relying on pots of coffee to get focus. Here are a few tricks I've discovered about, quote, sitting down to write, unquote. One, I like complete quiet, or perhaps light background noise. Right now, there are birds getting settled in the trees outside, a natural ruckus that doesn't bother me. I'm having a little conversation with myself inside my head as I write, sounding out words, voicing the sentences. It's pure schizophrenic behavior. I don't like other noises interfering with the ones in my head. I do know of writers who can write at peak capacity in a loud airport. They can just shut it all out. It's a skill. Two, other guys like to play music. Stephen King likes AC/DC when he's writing fiction. Studies show that light classical music without singing helps the brain solve creative problems. There's an entire niche in the music business devoted to background music. I find it intrusive because I love music and I notice it. Three, temperature is important. Studies show that keeping the room slightly cool will improve focus. I think it's 68 degrees. I like it cool. In fact, I like to dress warm in a cool room to write when I have a long session, say 2 hours or more. A warm room will make you sleepy, and drowsiness will murder your creativity. Four, however, you can use sleep to your advantage. I have found that I cannot work effectively if I have any sleepiness in me at all. So I'm quick to take a nap before writing. This, it turns out, is a good thing. While you sleep, all that info you've been pounding into your brain while awake gets reorganized and sifted through. It's amazing. So I keep a notepad and pen next to wherever I'm napping, because when I shudder awake, I almost always have a great headline or idea or concept boiling over, and I have to write it down quick or it's gone. The brain works in mysterious ways. Don't pass up any of the cool ways to get the best writing done. Five, relaxation in general will help your creative process. I get really terrific ideas while taking long, hot showers. That's very inconvenient. I've experimented with those waterproof markers and such, but mostly I just rush out of the shower, shedding water everywhere, and make fast notes on the nearest pad. Strangers who see my office often shake their heads at the varied sizes of waterlogged paper scattered over my desk. Hey, whatever works. Six, and I mean it, use whatever works for you. I used to wear writing clothes, a specific shirt and pants and slippers and even a friggin' hat. The idea was twofold. First, when I put on the clothes, I got in the mood to write, sort of like Superman slipping into his uniform. And second, the clothes were so ugly and dirty, I wouldn't dare wear them out of the house, so I had nowhere else to go, except to the desk to write. I still wear writing clothes, but not specific ones. I just like roomy cotton stuff, comfortable and loose and warm. Seven, furniture counts too. Go ahead and pay for a good chair with enough built-in ergonomics to support your slouching ass. Your lower back will start aching after a few years of sitting for too long periods, so stay in shape. Walk a lot. Take frequent breaks. Set a timer for 40 minutes if you have to, and get up when it dings, and don't sit down again until you've been up for 10 minutes or more. Eight, develop little fun activities you can do for 10 minutes at a pop, like playing with a dog, or fooling around with a musical instrument, or slugging a punching bag. Move and stretch. It's important. There's a phenomenon called writer's slouch. You get into your writing and your shoulders slump, your head falls forward, and your breathing becomes so shallow you get under-oxygenated. It's a trance-like state. So do runner's stretches, some deep yoga breathing to get the carbon dioxide out and the good air in, and do a few stomach strengthening exercises. Weak stomach muscles mean your lower back has to work harder and becomes susceptible to strain more easily, which you definitely do not want to deal with. Strong stomach muscles aren't that hard to maintain, and you'll look good in a bathing suit. Nine, finally, take real good care of yourself physically. Writing is not easy on the body. Okay, it isn't digging ditches, but it isn't lounging around the fireplace either. Early on, I discovered massage. Everywhere I've lived, one of the first contacts I made was with a professional massage therapist, and I've gone once a week for an hour and a half like my life depended on it. I would not eat a couple of meals each week to keep these massages in my life. I'm serious about this. Your body really is your temple, and you cannot treat it like shit and expect everything to run smoothly. Your brain is tissue, blood, liquid, and lots of tiny electrical sparks. You get clogged up, you get sludgy and dense inside, and you aren't going to perform at top caliber. Stay mega healthy, loose, relaxed, and fit. It does make a difference. I also do not overdo the caffeine. But I know writers who live on coffee. I prefer supplements like ginkgo, which boost your brain juices just enough to notice the difference. If I'm tired, like I said, I take a quick nap. Okay, that's about all I have to say on getting good. Freelancing is a great gig. Offers you more freedom than any other career on the planet, has built-in allowances for eccentricities like sleeping odd hours, and pays outrageously well. And we'll get into the money part very soon. Right now, let's get connected. Well, first, here's a final note. There's a fifth stage to many writers' careers, but it's not for everyone. It's the major leagues of copywriting, working for the big boys in direct mail like Rodale, Boardroom, Phillips, and the other large mailers. These are the companies who mail millions of letters every week. The money is breathtaking. So are the deadlines and the competition. There are no rookies working in this stage. I won't go over this stage very much because basically I don't believe you should aim for this upper level of ability. It's like learning how to play golf and thinking you're going to be playing in the Masters next season. It is not going to happen. By the time you get good enough to go professional, you'll know in your heart if moving up to the majors is something you should shoot for. Let me give you a taste of what that world looks like. There are only a handful of writers with the chops to succeed with the largest mailers. Many others try, and most of them fail. Their rewards for writing a winner can bring in hundreds of thousands of dollars for the copywriter, and that attracts the best writers in existence. These incredibly talented copywriters slug it out like gladiators, one piece against the other. Sometimes three world-class copywriters will compete at the same time. Only one can win. It's cutthroat. And it can take a month or longer just to write the piece. It's brutal work. One slip and the other writer will eat your lunch. When I accepted a job from these behemoth mailers, I knew I was out of circulation for 5 to 6 weeks. A huge box would arrive, stuffed with data and reports and market analysis and copies of every other letter ever written for the product. Just plowing my way through the information was exhausting. Actually, writing the copy was like having an organ removed. Why do writers suffer like this just for a direct mail letter? Easy. The upfront fees alone can equal the yearly take-home pay for the average American. And the residuals, the royalties, and per-piece mailed bonuses are simply staggering. There's actually a movement among large mailers to eliminate royalties because the bean counters are taking over the top positions at these companies, and they are more attuned to the bottom line than to what's necessary for direct response success. It's a shakeup that I predict will continue to foul things up for a long time. I worked for one such company, one of the largest mailers in the world, and had a fine standing deal with them, $25,000 up front just to do the job, plus a few cents per thousand letters mailed. That few cents may not sound like much until you realize the numbers they typically mailed. For several years, I received magnificent quarterly royalty checks from a single winning piece. And yet, I refuse to work with them anymore. And I'm not alone. There's an informal strike by top writers all over the country going on right now. Why? Well, many of these behemoth companies have similar histories. They were started by individuals steeped in the specifics and truths of direct response. Most of them were spectacular copywriters themselves and understood clearly that copy is king. You can have the greatest product in the universe, but if you cannot write a good ad to get the word out, you're headed for the dustbin of history, fella. That's why top writers earn so much money. They're worth it. every penny. Copywriters hold the key to creating winning ad campaigns. Not the designer, not the product manager, not the CEO, and most certainly not the bean counters or the lawyers. The writer is the key. If you were going to take a company and fire everybody who is easily replaceable, the writer is the last guy you'd give a pink slip to. He's got the skills that are hardest to replace. He's the secret weapon in all successful businesses. But people forget that. Writers are not thought of very highly among executives. We tend to be anti-authoritarian, we're full of quirks and eccentricities, and what we do seems like voodoo to those who cannot write. They often suspect we're merely performing tricks. And hey, if they had the time, they could learn to write too. Yeah, right. So here's the way so many big companies have evolved. They're started by a guy with copy skills, someone with lots of salesman's blood flowing in their veins. They get big because their ideas are sound and their copy is good and they understand direct response. And then they get too big and a larger and larger staff is needed. Soon the guy who started it all is edged out or retires and the battle for control is on. Guess who typically wins these battles? It's not the guys who understand direct response advertising. They're too busy making campaigns work and bringing in results. Nope. The winners of the struggle for control are the guys skilled at bureaucracy and corporate infighting. These are bullshit skills, good only for getting your ass booted upstairs. You've heard of the Peter Principle, haven't you? It goes something like this. In a corporation, you get promoted to your level of incompetence. That means if you're a great middle manager, the way you get rewarded is to get promoted to manager of the entire department. If you're good at that, you get bumped up to vice president. If you suck at managing the department, you stay there. You've hit your ceiling, just a little above what you're able to handle competently. So most corporations are staffed by people in the wrong job. Worse, the skills needed to take over the really high positions involve cheating, lying, stealing, all the bad things clever humans are capable of. Blame the other guy, never put yourself in a position to be held responsible for anything that goes wrong, and take credit for every good thing that someone else does, while stabbing your competition in the back. Now, that's the way to wrest control of a company. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. One of the things I'm going to try to drill into you here, as much as I can, is to deal with people who understand what they're doing. I have seldom gotten large companies to run the kind of advertising they should be running. Too many bean counters and lawyers and sycophants have to piss on the copy in order to justify their existence and keep getting their own paychecks, so that any decent sales message will get turned to mush before it's allowed out of the building. On the other hand, entrepreneurs and small businessmen who desperately want to do what actually works, not what they think might work, will pay you handsomely to deliver the goods. They'll run your copy intact and let the results decide if it's a winner or not. Few, if any, people in large corporations are beholden to the bottom line. It's always easier to say no than to risk being blamed for saying yes to anything. People have kept high-paying jobs for a generation simply by never taking responsibility for anything at any time. All right. You still want to test your chops with the big guys? It's not hard to get an audience with them. They are starved for writers. Their one unending task is to feed the bottomless stomach of the mailing monster. Talented writers are always welcome. F, you can hack the politics and hellish hard work.